Greetings, and welcome to the Avianca Group International Limited Lender Update conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief Q&A session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Luca Pfeiffer, Head of Investor Relations for the Avianca Group. Thank you, Mr. Pfeiffer. You may begin.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good morning, all, and thank you for making time for our call today. Joining us on our call is Avianca Group CEO, President Adrian Neuhauser, and our CFO, Rohit Philip. Adrian, unfortunately, has run into some technical issues, but he will join us within the next 5 to 10 minutes. As such, Rohit will walk you through the group's business update, fourth quarter 21 results, as well as one quarter 22 preliminary results. Adrian will then join us for closing remarks and the question and answer session. With that, let me turn it over to Rohit. Rohit.
Thank you, Luca. Good morning, everyone. Apologies for the slight delay in the start. And appreciate all of your taking the time to join our call today, and also appreciate all of your patience with us on sort of waiting for us to sort of publish our financial results. I know we took a little longer than we anticipated with sort of the technicalities of sort of getting through the fresh start accounting process with the audited financials took a little longer than we expected, but now we have all the information, and we expect to get on a regular reporting cycle like we sort of outlined on last Friday's call. So with that, let me start by taking you through our business update. I've sort of structured our presentation today into three parts, just an overall business update, the second section on the Q4 results and the December 31st balance sheet, and then the third section is a preliminary view on the Q1 financials, and this presentation will be posted in our Intralinks data room right after the call, and Luca will be trying to make sure that all of you have access to the data room, and apologize if there's been any technical issues with some of you getting access to it, but we'll try to straighten it out and also make the data room available to any prospective investors as well as sell side analysts. So with that, let me start. So Luca, if you can take us to slide 3 in the presentation. So Avianca emerged from Chapter 11 on December 1st with a business plan and a reminder on the three pillars of our business plan that we had discussed as part of the exit financing sort of presentation. Obviously, number one, a dramatically lower cost structure. Number two, substantial reduction in fleet costs and a more efficient network design, and a significant debt reduction and improved liquidity. In terms of the cost structure on bullet one, we'll walk you through how we're sort of going to hit a run rate CASK ex fuel of 3.88 by December, and how that sort of keeps us on track to hit the long-term goal we have on the overall cost structure. We'll also talk about sort of where we are in terms of the progress on the fleet restructuring, both in terms of the renegotiation of all the aircraft lease deals, the densification, as well as the increased aircraft utilization that's part of the network design, and also the balance sheet and liquidity. So with that, if we go to slide 4, this is where we are on the cost structure. So if we look at CASK ex fuel, if you look at the bar on the right, the 3.4 was the target cost structure that we had in our business plan. And the first bar chart on the left is the 5.49 that we were in 2019. So you can see that during the course of 22, we expect to achieve a significant amount of the reductions, which should get us by December to a run rate in December of 3.88. And then sort of get through the remaining sort of efficiencies in 23. So in 23, we will hit the steady state sort of number of 3.4. With that, if we go to slide 5, obviously densification of our aircraft is a key component of what where we're doing. So as you can see, we've got we'll have brand new seats in all our planes, but and obviously the 180 seat configuration versus the 150 seats today, and that densification plan is on track. As of March, end of March, we had sort of 27 aircraft. I think we're up to 30 or 31 as we speak, and we expect to finish 97 aircraft by year end. So there'll be a few aircraft in the first quarter of 23 that'll be remaining, but largely on track. And our internal team has become very efficient in reducing the timeline from 18 days to 15 days, which has allowed us to make up for some of the challenges we've had with all the supply chain and logistics sort of issues in the world today. Obviously, this program has had its fair challenges as far as that's concerned, but we've been able to make up some of that time through the turnaround time that our team's been doing. So we're pleased with our progress so far. If I move to slide 6, we'll talk about our network redesign. Is well on track to increase the number of point-to-point destinations, which will also in turn help us increase aircraft utilization. So during the fourth quarter, we launched 12 new point-to-point routes. During 2022, we expect to launch another 30 new routes. And also important to note that in spite of all the increased capacity, and as you all probably know, significant infrastructure challenges at Bogota, we have maintained a very healthy on-time performance. So operationally, we're performing well in spite of the challenges with the infrastructure we have at Bogota. And on the table above, I'll just point you to aircraft utilization, which was 9.2 in 2019. Then in March, we're already at 10.8 based on the redesign of the network, and by year end, we should get to 11.9 hours per day on the fleet, which is close to the target we need to get to. And then the last slide in the first section is about our liquidity and total debt. So in terms of liquidity, we are about $300 million ahead of where we expected to end cash in December 31st. So you can see that now. A large chunk of that $200 million is based on operational cash improvements, and we'll talk through that when I go through the fourth quarter results. That really, on the back of strong demand, we've been able to sort of beat business plan projections. There are some timing issues in there, but a large chunk of this is based on operational performance improvement. On the total debt side, you can see that we emerged with a slightly lower debt balance than our business plan projections, but that is just a little bit artificial. So we have a little bit of a dotted line that is getting us back to the business plan levels once we finalize all the lease agreements that are almost finalized, because we can't book the IFRS 16 liability until the final long-term leases are signed. So there are a few leases that were pending at the end of the December 31st. That's why the balance is lower, but we're largely on track with the business plan debt levels. So with that high-level overview, let me go into the fourth quarter, and Luca, if you can move to slide 9, just a little bit of a disclaimer that the fourth quarter is a little bit of an odd year, a hard quarter, because we have, it's not really one company, it's sort of a management accounts of consolidating October and November of Avianca Holdings results with December of Avianca Group. But we've tried, we'll try to walk you through sort of operationally sort of how that all sort of fits together to give you a picture of how the quarter looked overall. So with that, go to slide 10. So if you look at the consolidated performance for the quarter, and I'll just look at, I'll talk about the bar charts on the right. So the first bar chart is in capacity. We were at 7.1 billion ASKs in the quarter, which was an 18.2% higher capacity than the business plan assumptions, which was obviously because we saw the demand recovering strongly and we started to try to ramp up capacity to match the demand. And if you can see the line graph on the top of that bar, you can see load factors for the fourth quarter were at 84.1% compared to business plan assumptions that in the fourth quarter we would still be at 71%. So obviously strong demand and we were able to add capacity to take advantage of that demand, and you can see that even on the number of passengers on the right, on the top right. And then on the bottom right, you can see the weekly average sales chart, which is interesting because we were at, for the quarter, about 54% of pre-pandemic capacity levels. But you can see our daily sales sort of over the quarter started to close in on the 2019 numbers, so we were about 30% below. So we were about 70% of our 2019 levels in terms of weekly sales, even though we were operating only 54% of the capacity. So again, just another indication of the demand recovery in Q4. Going to slide 11, sort of taking that into sort of unit economics, you can see I'll focus on the bar charts. The PRASK for the fourth quarter was at 7.8 cents, 26% improvement over the business plan assumption. If we look at yield, yield was up 7.4%, and average fares were up a little bit more than that, from $91 average fare to $106 average fare. So obviously the higher yield combined with the higher load factor gave us the 26% PRASK improvement compared to the business plan projections. On the CASK side of the top right bar, you'll see that CASK ex fuel was 6.8 cents, and then fuel CASK was 1.8 cents versus 2.2 cents. So fuel CASK obviously higher because fuel prices were higher than the business plan assumptions. And if you look at the chart below, I just wanted to walk through a comparison to see whether the increased revenue was offsetting the fuel price increase. And so you can see that the revenue on a unit economics perspective outperformed the business plan by 1.6 cents, while the fuel cost went up by 0.3 cents. So for the fourth quarter, clearly that equation was in our favor. When I walk through Q1 results, I'll show you that it's largely that the same equation is largely break even, because obviously fuel prices continue to trend up in Q1 and specifically spike up in March. So I'll talk about the same equation in Q1, which is not as favorable, but at least it is break even in Q1. So with that, we'll go to slide 12. And talk about cargo, and cargo continues to be a strong performer. So if you look at the bar chart on the bottom right, you'll see that revenues for the fourth quarter were 22% higher than business plan, 32 million higher than the business plan assumption. And on the top right shows the capacity. So if you look at the freighter capacity largely in line, we obviously, with the higher passenger capacity, we do have more belly cargo capacity. So there is an increase in capacity, but really the revenue performance was more driven by outperformance on the freighter side. So cargo continues to be obviously a strong business unit for us. Going to slide 13 on LifeMiles. LifeMiles continues a steady recovery. If you look at the bar charts again on the right, third-party gross billings, which is a key metric for us, slightly behind business plan assumptions, but it's been sequentially improving. So getting largely on track with our business plan. And then LifeMiles cash flow through Avianca, which is a key metric we measure, is a little bit better than business plan, and that's primarily driven by the fact that we've been able to capture a larger chunk of the redemptions on us. So if you look at the chart at the bottom, it's important to sort of see that pre-pandemic, if you look at the first bar on the bottom, about 63% of the redemptions were on Avianca. And then during the pandemic, obviously, at one point, 100% of the redemptions went to non-air, obviously, when we were not flying. And for us, that increased back towards the pre-pandemic levels, which you can see is very critical for a couple of reasons. One is obviously cash flow. You want to keep the cash within the group and burn the miles sort of more cost effectively for us. But also consumers actually end up getting a better value for miles that they redeem within Avianca. And so they're more satisfied and end up spending more if they redeem more in Avianca. So I think we're very pleased with that bottom chart trend line sort of coming up. And, you know, it's been done both with the recovery in air travel, but also with a lot of work that we've done within our teams, within our LifeMiles and commercial teams to find opportunities to add more redemption seats where we have excess inventory to create value for customers while burning sort of excess capacity. So I think there's been a very proactive way we've sort of managed that to try to get this outcome to get back to those levels. So with that, move to slide 14, and now talk about sort of on a consolidated basis. Let me walk through the EBIT chart at the bottom right, because in the fourth quarter, looking all the way to the net income is a little difficult, or there's a lot of noise in sort of the below-the-line numbers in the pre-bankruptcy time. So really looking at it on an EBIT basis and looking at it excluding restructuring fees. And I'll talk about restructuring fees when we talk about cash flow. But excluding restructuring fees, EBIT from a negative 43 in our business plan was positive 21, so a 60 million improvement versus business plan. And at the EBITDA level, it was also about a 70 million improvement versus business plan. You can see the performance of that 60 million is obviously mainly based on strong revenue, offset by a little bit of fuel. The increased capacity that we were able to deploy obviously was positive for us, and cargo generated also positive EBIT versus plan. So that's the, in summary, sort of the fourth quarter sort of consolidated numbers. Again, just to repeat, this is sort of 2 months of Avianca Holdings and 1 month of Avianca Group. And with that, move to slide 15 and talk about cash flow. So a few things I want to point out. So first I'll point out, on the chart on the left, you look at the first box, net cash flow provided by operations. So we were about 205 million ahead of business plan projections in terms of cash flow from operations. So clearly, again, a function of both the overperformance on the better than plan performance on the revenue side, the strong demand, as well as you can see working capital also is improvement because we were very conservative in our assumptions on APL buildup, and the forward booking curve was very short. While the forward booking curve is not long, it's obviously been able to get lengthened enough to sort of create some additional sort of working capital, which we think is a more permanent effect. It's not a temporary effect. I think we've sort of migrated to a higher than our business plan assumption in terms of working capital. So you can see we have a better cash flow from operations. And then there's a big negative in the cash flow in the line item called Chapter 11 professional fees. You can see 127.5 million versus 26.2 in the business plan, so 100 million worse. But if you look at the note on the right, in our business plan, we had assumed an exit in 3Q. So we had assumed most of the restructuring fees were in 3Q. So if you look at sort of the total restructuring fees we had in our business plan in 2021 versus the actuals were 193 million if you look at the note 4 on the right, while business plan was 122 million. So it had a, we ended up being 71 million higher than business plan, but of which there was 37 million of other, and really 35 million, while we didn't spell it out on the page, was our termination payment we had to make to United to terminate the 10-year exclusive deal we had to give us more degrees of freedom with our core share. We still have a strong relationship with United. United is an equity investor. United has a strong core share partner, but we made the election to terminate the 10-year exclusivity. So that was the 35 out of that. So if you exclude that, we really were above restructuring expenses by about 35 million, which is in the scheme of things still higher than we planned, but in the scheme of things sort of within the range of what of error that you would have. Chapter 11, as we all know, is always more expensive than you expect, and we're glad to be behind it with this slight variation of higher expenses. So with that, the last line on the table on the left again is the ending cash balance at the end of the year was about 280 million better than business plan, and with that we can move to slide 16, and I'll walk you through the balance sheet, the asset side first. So in the balance sheet fragile, we as I said have to do sort of the equivalent of fresh start accounting under US GAAP, but since our accounts are under IFRS, we adopted IFRS 3, which is sort of loosely called purchase accounting. It's really a accounting for combination or business combination, I think is the technical term. But it works effectively the same as fresh start accounting, which is basically revalue all your assets and liabilities at fair value. So just with that, obviously the detailed financial statements are available to you, but just walk through some key highlights. Obviously the cash, the first line, the 300 million higher than planned, it's not going to tie exactly to the cash flow statement because in the cash flow statement we talk about cash, restricted cash and short-term investments collectively as cash. So that's how we would tie to the previous page. But a couple of key points to note. Note B on intangible assets and goodwill. That's sort of the key area where the revaluation sort of manifests itself. And we have obviously a significant amount of value attributed to intangibles of 1.2 billion and goodwill of 1.7 billion as part of the revaluation. Revaluation of the balance sheet. And so I just wanted to mention that on the asset side. If you go to the liability side on the next page, on page 17, you'll see a few things I just want to mention. The note C on IFRS 16 lease liability is sort of in line with what I talked about in the initial part of the presentation, which is that we haven't finalized all our long-term leases, so as we sign all the leases, that number will go up to match the business plan sort of number. Footnote D on tax liabilities, this is really a deferred tax. About 300 million is a deferred tax line that was associated with, again, IFRS 3. So as you increase the intangible assets, you have to have a deferred tax liability that's associated with that, and so that's why you see an increase it's not an increase in the amount of tax payable. It's just an increase in the deferred tax liability associated with the intangible asset revaluation. And then I want to point out in footnote E is an increase that primarily includes a fresh provision of 273 million related to lease return conditions. since we redid all our leases, we took a fresh look at our lease return conditions and adopted a more conservative accounting than historically Avianca Holdings did on lease return conditions to sort of properly provision for all the return conditions associated with the leases. That number will go up as the remaining leases are signed, but I want to point out that was the reason for that for the provisions there. And then on air traffic liability, again, an increase based on the increase in forward sales, as I mentioned, compared to the business plan, but then also about $140 million of that $523 million in air traffic liability is associated with refunds we issued in the form of UATP cards, which is really just a credit for the customer that will get utilized when the customer actually uses the card to buy a ticket on Avianca. So there's about $140 million of refunds that were issued for flights during the pandemic that are in that forward sales number. And then lastly, the note below on equity, obviously the old equity balance is wiped out and we revalue equity based on the new money that came in. And so the 1.163 number in terms of the equity is largely associated with the tranche B conversion. So the tranche B was a $723 million sort of principal that was accrued interest at the time of the merger was about $950 million. So converting that $950 million plus the $200 million of new money that came in gets you the $1.15 billion. So that's essentially how the equity is valued based on the on that conversion price and the new money investment. So that's how the valuation of the equity is done as per IFRS 3. And that sort of concludes the fourth quarter presentation. If I can now move forward to take us through the Q1 preliminary results. So in the Q1 preliminary results, just a point to note, we will have the final results finalized the week of May 16th and have another call to walk you through the results in more detail towards the end of that week. Primarily, I think we have in today we'll be able to walk you through the numbers up to the EBITDA level and also cash flow. But the numbers below EBITDA sort of are affected significantly by the IFRS 3 that we just walked through, and that'll sort of get finalized in the next couple of weeks before we can post the Q1 numbers. And then going forward, we would expect to be on a much more timely basis in terms of finalizing the results of the quarter, shortly after the end of the quarter. So with that, let's go to slide 19 and talk about Q1 results. So a Q1 preliminary results on slide 19, the first bar chart on the top left talks about capacity. So obviously with the strong demand, we were able to ramp up capacity, as I said, in Q4 and in Q1 as well. It's 12.5% ahead of business plan assumptions. If you look on the top right, you'll see that demand continues to be strong. So in our business plan, we did have load factors start to recover by Q1 at 81.4%, but business plan was close to 83%. And actually, that is also a little bit understated because there's 2 to 3 points of additional sort of no-show revenue that we were able to get based on non-refundable tickets that people didn't show. So really the book load factor was closer to 84% on the demand side. If you look at the yield at the bottom right, you'll see yield was up 11.2% and actually average fare up 26% from $76 business plan assumption to $97 in actuality. And then on the bottom left, you'll see that translates into a total passenger revenue per ASK, which includes ancillaries, that is 13% higher than business plan. So if I move to slide 20, I'll just take you through the same math that we did for Q4 on on whether the incremental revenue was able to offset the increased fuel price. So you can see at the bottom of the page, you'll see fuel price per gallon was 2.87 on average for the quarter. Obviously, March was about $3 versus a business plan assumption of 184. And so the increase of 0.75 cents per ASK. But the revenue of increase of 0.77 just about offset the fuel price increase. So we are able to, at least in Q1, able to offset the increased fuel price. And then if you go to slide 21, just talk about cargo and light miles. So the top two charts are on cargo. So you look at cargo capacity, again, on the freighter side, actually slightly below business plan projections because of some challenges we've had with engine availability on some of the older freighters. But in spite of that, the freighter revenue has actually been outperforming. We have had also some more additional belly cargo capacity. But overall, the cargo business remains strong, and we expect that some of the underperformance in terms of capacity on the freighters relative to the business plan will be addressed, and we'll get closer to business plan levels towards the remainder of the year. But we still have some challenges with the aircraft availability based on sort of the engine availability. But again, overall cargo business remains strong. Life miles, if we look at that. In Q1, third-party billings on the bottom left are roughly in line with business plan, and cash flow to Avianca ahead of plan, obviously because of the higher amount of redemptions on that we're recapturing at Avianca. So moving to slide 22, you'll see this. I won't spend too much time on this chart. You'll have this in the data room that you can study in detail. The bottom line is at the EBITDA level, we have $135 million of EBITDA versus $89 million in the business plan. And I'll just walk you through on slide 23 the variance, the reasons for the bridge for the improved performance. You can see that the incremental revenue is sort of offset by the incremental fuel cost. So then the benefits are really about the increased capacity, and then largely cargo performance offset by a little bit of sort of additional restructuring fees that should went into Q1. So overall, still outperformed on the EBITDA level. And then on slide 24, talk about cash flow. So if you look at the box on the first box on the top about net cash flow from operations, you'll see that we had an $83 million improvement versus business plan in cash flow from operations. And then if you look at the bottom line, you're with just over $1.2 billion ending cash compared to $914 in the business plan, so still $300 million ahead of business plan assumptions. There is a little bit of timing in that, but we think we're still probably about $200 million ahead, even accounting for timing issues with related to cabin densification and some of the leasing sort of things that we have, but we're still well ahead of business plan projections. And I think that takes us to the end of our presentation. So with that, I will turn it over to Adrian to see if he can sort of add some closing remarks, and then we'll open it up for questions. So over to you, Adrian.
Sure. So thanks, Rohit. Thank you all for joining, and apologies. I had some technical issues. My closing remarks were meant to be opening remarks, but I couldn't dial in when you started. Look, first of all, I think I want to thank you all for the patience you've had and the support you've given us while you waited for us to be able to disclose information. Obviously, over the next couple of months, you'll see our efforts ramp up. I know it's important to all of you. It's important to us as well. The numbers that you've seen, and just getting to IFRS 16 numbers and dealing with the IFRS 3 issues, et cetera, have been more of a challenge than we expected, but we're really happy with the ultimate results and proud of the work the team did there. More broadly, I think you can see in the numbers both fourth quarter, but also first quarter, even with the challenges that we had early in the quarter with Omicron, and then later in the quarter with fuel spikes, we continue to see stronger performance than we had predicted in the business plan. We are ahead of plan on the cost side, and we've been able to keep fares significantly higher than we had projected while still stimulating demand, and that has continued, frankly, into the second quarter, where we're seeing pretty solid levels of fuel recapture. So we're proud of the work that the entire team is doing on the operational side, on the commercial side, on the financial side, and we're happy to be able to start disclosing it to you and showing you numbers so you can develop your own opinions and gauge for yourselves. So with that, I think, you know, we'd like to turn it over to you for questions, and obviously here to answer anything you need and available for follow-ups on the side if needed as well. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is now open for questions. If you have any questions or comments, please press star one on your phone at this time. We ask that while posing your question, you please pick up your handset if you're listening on a speakerphone to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. Okay, as a reminder, press star one if you would like to ask any questions. Okay, we have a first question coming from Michael Kaufman of Redwood Capital Management. Michael, over to you.
Great. Thank you very much for the detailed and clear presentation. We appreciate the clarity and congrats on the strong two quarters. Glad to hear that it's continuing into the next. Wanted to ask one little bit of housekeeping question. Take it offline if it's easier. But for the fourth and first quarter on the cashless statement, you have the line for debt PBH and power by the hour payments. Can you give us a sense of what the power by the hour payments were in each of the quarters, and are you able to split that between principal and interest?
Right.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, no, sorry. I was trying to take myself off mute, so sorry about that. We can probably give you offline or follow up with providing the breakdown between PBH and actual rents. The PBH is sort of start to go away as we. Sorry, the PBH has start to go away as we sign the long term leases. So it's been sort of going down. The PBHs don't go into interest; they just go as rent because they're short term agreements. So they don't get broken down into principal and interest, but we expect that line item at the end of Q1 to be remaining PBHs in Q2 to be very small and then to be completely gone by the end of Q2.
I see. I guess the more general question is, can you, if I look at, what I'm trying to understand is what the right aircraft expenditure number is, either quarterly or annually, after we kind of get past this period on like a, let's say, normalized run rate basis. Should I just look at the 2023 business plan aircraft expenditure line and so add principal and interest? And is that the right benchmark to think about the fleet cost for this business?
I think that's a very good way to look at it, because we would expect to trend back to that line. I think we can on the Q1 call, maybe we'll try to break that out in a little bit more detail to you in a couple of weeks. to give you a little bit more guidance on how to look at that. But it's going to be, I think, what you just said in terms of 2023 numbers is a pretty good proxy.
Great. And then last one, if I can sneak it in, thank you again, is can you give us any color on, and Adrian, I think you mentioned briefly that there was, you're having success getting incremental fuel recapture in the second quarter. Are you starting to see demand temper as you increase prices to offset fuel, or do you think there's still strong enough demand to meet profitability targets given fuel price increases?
I'll take that if you don't mind. We haven't, guys. It's something that we obviously have concern about. We obviously look at, but it's been remarkably resilient. I think what there is, and I don't want to be blasé about you know concerns that ultimately pricing impacts demand, but you know we've got a couple of dynamics going on, right? One is obviously underlying pent up demand from people that just haven't traveled. The second is that if you think about, right, we had a slide there, and I don't want to go into what the numbers are yet in the second quarter. But if you look at the slide where we showed you, you know, kind of average fares in the fourth quarter, right, you were talking sub $100 for the network, right? When you think about those fares going up 10 or 20 or 30 or 40%, right, you're talking about percentages that are very big relating to the airline ticket, but that are relatively small relating to the overall cost of the trip. And I think what we're seeing now is, you know, the airline ticket has become a reasonably irrelevant part of the trip. You know, when you're taking taxis on both ends, when you're going to a restaurant, when you're staying at a hotel, right? And so we're not seeing that the fare changes kind of really impact overall demand. They do two or three things that we've experimented with. The first is we had a week early in April where we went through a pretty substantive fare hike, and it did impact sales for about 3 or 4 days before. You know, there's a little bit of a game of chicken, right? Because the market's used to you lowering rates, the market's used to you going back down. So yeah, you know, the guy that went on the page, saw $100 fare, was thinking about flying next week, and then goes on, sees $140, waits a few days before realizing that that's the new level and kind of buying it. So when you make pretty substantive hikes, you see a drop. But if you hold it, our experience has been, you know, it sticks. The second one is, you know, kind of what the competition has done, because a lot of what happens is, you know, overall demand may be impacted very slightly, but depending on how different people react, you see market share shifts from one to another. So when we went through that rate hike, pretty much everyone followed us, except Ultra. Ultra kept their fares at the 60,000 peso level in domestic Colombia that they've kind of had. Everyone else followed us, but Viva did something kind of interesting, which is about a week later they lowered. You know, we had gone up in kind of three steps, but we'd gone up about 50,000 pesos, so call it about $12. And everyone had kind of followed us, and then Viva kind of dropped back 10,000 pesos, right? They decided to create a gap between us and them. So we were all kind of leveled at a much higher level than we were before. But what we think is that, you know, when Viva matches us, they're kind of unable to keep market share. So they had to create a gap. And then in the last few weeks, LATAM dropped back 10,000 pesos to match Viva. We did the same, so we gave up about $2. And then Viva dropped another 10,000 to kind of recreate the gap, right? Even with that gap, right, we're filling the plane. So we don't actually need to be at Viva's level. As well, it said, you know, load factors have been extremely healthy. So, you know, all of that goes to say, you know, you've got kind of game theory going on, people moving around, et cetera. but it seems to be more of a play for market share than kind of impacts to overall demand. And what we're seeing is that, you know, even with the pretty substantial price hikes that we've pushed through, you know, the planes are flying full.
Great. That was, thank you for that answer. Yeah. Very detailed. Appreciate it. Thank you for the information on the court.
Okay, just as a reminder, if you wish to ask any questions or you have any comments, please press star one on your phone at this time. Okay, there appear to be no further questions at this time.
Well, I think you overwhelmed everyone with great detail, so that's awesome. Guys, again, obviously, if there's questions that you'd like to have answered offline or have separate conversations, we're available to you. And ultimately, again, acknowledging that we have a debt to you in strengthening and broadening our disclosure. So you'll see us do that over the next couple of months. So thank you again for the patience and the support you've given us, and look forward to talking to you shortly once we've got. Full Q1 numbers to show you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This does conclude today's teleconference. You may now disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you so much for your participation.